Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
It's a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM, Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Hello there, good morning, and you're very welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport here on Dublin's 98FM. On the way between now and 10, we'll be talking all things Rugby World Cup with Ireland's Chris Farrell, Jacob Stockdale and former player Shane Byrne. But how have the Ireland team's friends and family been navigating their way around Japan?
My father would be old school enough, like he wouldn't be using the Google Maps on his phone or anything. He probably doesn't have an iPhone, to be sure. He says anytime he gets a map out, like, and he's in the train station looking at a map, there's always someone comes over and is like, just make sure he's going the right direction. So
98FM's League of Ireland Sunday will hear the story of how Shamrock Rovers man Roberto Lopez is getting ready to make his international debut for the Cape Verde.
It's fantastic. It's still like it's hard to believe, to be honest with you, Jamie. Like, as you say, it just kind of came about really quickly, and now that like I'm here right now, the airport, it's just a bit surreal. I can't wait just to meet up with everyone.
Ireland women's national team manager Vera Pauw on her first game in charge this Tuesday at a sold-out Tallaght Stadium with the prospect of a new women's attendance record.
And we need the people. We need you to be part of us, to be part of this journey, to be part of this process and project, because that makes the difference between qualifying and just not qualifying.
We'll hear from Aaron Connolly after his Brighton Premier League 2 goals yesterday and his first Ireland senior call-up, and an exclusive chat as well with Ireland goalkeeper Mr. Darren Randolph.
Next minute bouncing over everyone and Longy's through. I'm thinking, go on. Then because obviously he went on and he scored, and the noise, the atmosphere that night was unbelievable.
We'll also be giving one lucky listener a pair of tickets for two sold-out Euro qualifiers at Tallaght Stadium this week. The women's game on Tuesday and the under-21 match on Thursday. There are no tickets left to buy. The only place for you to get them is here on the That's What I Call Sport. And we'll tell you how to win in just a few minutes. But firstly, we shall start in Japan.
98FM, Now That's What I Call Sport.
It's a very good morning to former Lions, Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne, our resident Rugby World Cup expert. Shane, good morning, how are you?
Morning, all good.
Thanks very much for having a chat as always. So just, I suppose, an overview, Shane, of the last week at the Rugby World Cup for Ireland. We began with that defeat to defeat to Japan, and then a 35-0 win over Russia sets us up for the final game against Samoa next Saturday. So the last time you spoke to us, we were looking back on the first couple of games, and since then we've had that win over Russia. So just your thoughts on the last few days, really.
Yeah, well, I suppose the win over Russia, I suppose depends how you look at it. If you're being pragmatic, you would go a win, bonus point, everything we needed, we got. So move on, keep going. But if, like me, you're hoping for a bit more of a statement that they're back on form, that the Japan game was a bit of a blip, I don't think we got it. Definitely we did what we needed to do, but we still struggled at time. And to me, the Russians tried very, very hard. They stayed in the game. And, you know, probably that shouldn't have been the case. We should have been able to rack up more points, but we got to move on. We've the first box ticked, as we saw from the results with Japan and Samoa. The task has become a little bit harder, but it's still completely in our hands. A bonus point win against Samoa, it doesn't matter what happens in any other game, we're through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, we spoke about just before the tournament began, about that little bit of unease around things, just given a couple of the results in the warm-up games, and then that defeat to Japan as well. And I would be very interested to hear what they think in camp, because they never really tell the full truth when speaking to the media about performances and about games. They talk about just, you know, wanting to win and wanting to pick up points, which they have done in two of those three games. But inside the camp, I'm sure they will be, you know, trying to put their finger on exactly why performances maybe haven't been what we'd all expect.
Yeah, well, like, that is it. I presume, like, we can only guess. There's no doubt about it. He put out a very strong side against Japan, and probably thought that the experience was making the statement that you wanted to get out there and, you know, just get through the two hardest games. as well as we could. There was no Johnny Sexton there or about. But what he ended up doing was, it was a team that got tired quickly. We started the game brilliantly. You know, when you have a hard-up defence against you, like Japan have, very active defence, you go around them, you kick the ball, you know, to keep the contest again, and we started brilliant. But then we started to hesitate in defence, which is a mental issue. And then we changed the game plan, which was absolute madness. And we started to play a game which made us defend for a long, long time in the game. And that just absolutely sapped the energy out of the guy's legs. And you could see that that was the speed of the ruck time from Japan. And all of these things just weren't getting addressed. And we ended up in a situation where the game just slipped away from us. And there was absolutely nothing. We were lucky that the scoreline wasn't far, you know, worse against us, because there was opportunities Japan had that they didn't take. And it was very disappointing. And we all wanted to see a statement come on back against Japan. It was a job done effort, but nothing more. So we really don't know where we are at the moment. And that's the real task ahead of us in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, Samoa up next on Saturday as well. And the players have spoken in their media stuff this week, Shane, about having a full week or more, really, to, you know, to go and get ready for this game. It was a 5-day turnaround between Japan and Russia, and I'm sure they'll just be very, very happy to be able to work as a full group with the coaching staff to really try and get things right for this final game. And as you mentioned, the bonus point win means that nothing else really matters, and they have lots of time to focus on trying to get that.
Yeah, it's the longest break we have in the World Cup, and let's hope that they're really, really taking advantage of it, because part of that would be unwinding from us, away from the stresses, distract the guys, get them out to do a bit of an R&R, and just take your mind off it, because a bit of cabin fever does set in, you know, when you're going training and then back to your room and you have something else on, you know, training wise or meetings, you know, your mind can just be going in overtime and you just need to tune out for a while. But the guys know there's a severe, you know, there's a serious task at hand, and they know the current form that they're in. It's an awful shame because against Scotland, and I don't hold to this at all, the Scotland were poor. Against Scotland, we were back to the clinical way we used to play in 2018, and what that made it was that we were a very hard team to play against. And people think that, you know, would say a side didn't play well. It wasn't that. It was that Ireland didn't let us. And that's the disappointing thing. We were so close to keeping that going in the first 20 minutes against Japan, and then it just slipped away. And that's the biggest thing we need to get back. Let's just say we get through the Samoa game, we get into the quarterfinals. We know we have to find that again, and Joe knows that. And that's going to be the biggest problem. It's there. He just has to find a way to get the guys to get it out onto the park and have the confidence. And if things don't go right on the pitch, the players have to have the responsibility to change things as we're playing.
Yeah, we've spoken about on the pitch. Now let's hear from a couple of players before we finish with Shane about life off the pitch in Japan. Chris Farrell and Jacob Stockdale on their experience overall of the World Cup.
I've really enjoyed it. It's obviously a really, really different culture to anything that we experience, you know, where we normally travel. But, you know, it's great that we get this opportunity to play such a massive tournament in a place with such a different culture. And the Japanese are, you know, they're unbelievably welcoming. You know, my parents have been here for the last 3 weeks, and my father would be old school enough, like he wouldn't be using the Google Maps on his phone or anything. He probably doesn't have an iPhone, to be sure. But he says anytime he gets a map out, like, and he's in the train station looking at a map, there's always someone comes over and is like, just make sure he's going the right direction. So from what I've gathered, all of the experiences that my family have done is that, you know, they're really welcoming.
Yeah, I was exactly the same. Obviously, I was lucky enough to be out here kind of 2 years ago with the tour, and I think, to be honest, say the first couple of days out here last time, I didn't really enjoy it that much, just because it's such a culture shock and it's so different. But by the time I was leaving, I loved it and I couldn't wait to get back. And yeah, it's been brilliant so far. And to be honest, it's been a lot more enjoyable this time, being able to kind of travel around and see different cities and you know, kind of experience different cultures, you know, like different parts of Japan. Which, yeah, it's just been really fun. And like Chris said, like, everybody has been so unbelievably welcoming, and you know, they'll do anything for you to try and help you out, which is class. Like, so yeah, it's been a fairly thoroughly enjoyable trip for me so far anyway.
Yeah, nice to hear the players speaking about a bit of R&R away from the training pitch, Shane, and you know, team meetings and matches and physio and whatever else they have to do as well, and that's something I'm sure that is very important for sports people across all sports really, that they do have time to go and see places and do things away from the kind of nature of what it is to be in a big tournament from a sporting point of view.
Oh, it is, yeah. We briefly discussed about the mental side of it is huge. Listen, you can be absolutely a fantastic physical specimen, but unless your head is right, you can't play the game to the level that's needed. And that is a huge, huge factor for Ireland. And it's what Joe's biggest challenge ahead is. Look, the game against Samoa is going to be hard. That was a cracker against Japan yesterday. And, you know, they are going to be a hard team to get the four tries against. And Ireland need to be very, very precise in what they're doing. They need to be mentally prepared for this. Never mind what's coming for us in the quarterfinal. We still have a challenge ahead to meet. And if we go out and if we are mentally in the right position after this good long break, and the guys have had the rest to de-stress or whatever way you want to call it, that they're ready for this game, there's nothing that they can't do.
Great stuff, Shane, as always. Thanks a million. We'll see you next Sunday, morning after that game, Ireland Samoa. Thanks a million.
Take care.
Yeah, that other game yesterday, Shane mentioned, Japan 38, Samoa 19. And two games today, New Zealand beat Namibia 71-9. And Namibia actually led in that game. And I was coming in listening on the radio. They were actually 3-0 up. And apparently the look on some of the players' faces was just unbelievable. And one game ongoing at the moment. 25 minutes gone, France 10, Tonga 0. They're the two games on the agenda in Japan today. Yes, and that's what I call sport with Jamie Moore. And Nathan Whelan joins me as always. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, sir?
Great, thanks very much. Now, away from the World Cup, the Pro 14 ongoing?
Yes, and there were some surprising results for the provinces in Pro 14 action this week. On Friday, Leinster hammered the Ospreys 53-5 at the RDS. There were three games on Saturday. The Southern Kings lost 20 points to 31. Munster were away there. However, the big shock of the weekend came as the Toyota Cheetahs hammered Ulster 63-26. Meanwhile, Connacht scored a 41-5 win over Benetton at the Sports Grounds.
Now, still to come, we're going to hear from Vera Powell. We'll also bring in the exclusive chat with Darren Randolph, Shamrock Rovers' Roberto Lopez on his call-up for the Cape Verde, and Aaron Connolly on those two goals for Brighton yesterday ahead of his call-up to the senior team for the first time. We're back in a sec.
98 FM's, now that's what I call sport.
Jamie Moore here on Sunday, 98 FM's League of Ireland Sunday, and Shamrock Rovers Dubliner Roberto Lopez has been called up to the Cape Verde squad for the first time. He qualifies through his dad Carlos, who comes from the Atlantic Ocean Islands, and Pico's in the squad for upcoming friendlies against Togo on Thursday and the DR Congo on Sunday, both games in Marseille, France. And he joins me on the line now after last night's scoreless draw in the League of Ireland in Sligo, of course, with the FAI Cup final to come in a few weeks' time. So a massive few weeks for Roberto. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jamie. I'm not too bad. It's a bit tired, obviously, early start.
Yes, thanks for having a chat early on a Sunday morning, and you're about to head off to the airport as well to fly off to meet up with your new international teammates. So what's your reaction to your big news during the week that you've been called up by the Cape Verde for the first time?
It's fantastic. It's hard to believe, to be honest with you, Jamie. Like, as you say, it kind of came about really quickly, and now that I'm here right now at the airport, it's just a bit surreal. I can't wait just to meet up with everyone and obviously be a part of the squad.
Yeah. I'm always interested to find out how players actually hear the news of their international call-up, because we find out via press release emails or on Twitter. How did you hear yourself?
The whole kind of process was a bit crazy, to be honest with you. It was through LinkedIn that I found out that they'd be interested in getting me into the squad. So that was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and the process kind of snowballed from there. I was in contact with, I think, the vice president of the federation just to get the T's crossed and the O's dots. And I think last week I was in the divisional squad. I got an email about when I saw the club, and even at that, I was just kind of still might or might not happen. And then obviously when it was released that I got in the squad, it was a shock to me, and I'm delighted. So
I was thinking a phone call from the manager Stephen Bradley, or a WhatsApp or an email from someone in the Cape Verde Federation, but LinkedIn for an international footballer, wow, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, and it goes a bit more weird than that as well, because I got a text on LinkedIn probably about a year ago, this time a year ago, in Portuguese, but I don't really speak Portuguese, only one or two words. and I just thought it was spam, like, so I took no notice of it. And then obviously probably about a month ago, I got another message back in English to say, did I think about it? And I was like, what's going on here? What was it to think about? So I still was a bit sceptical and didn't reply. And then I think it was the manager actually who texted me. He said, just forget about it. And then I was a bit panicking and I was just like, what's he had to ask me here? So I translated the message and it turned out it was him asking, would I be interested in declaring for Cape Verde because I looked like getting new players into the squad. So of course I kind of went back with my tail between my legs, apologised, just said I don't speak Portuguese. And yeah, it just took off from there, and I got in contact with a lad in the Federation who's been texting me and emailing me back and forth all the documents that I need, and then eventually asked me for the club contact. I gave him the secretary's email, and it came from there.
Yes, now I've been doing some research, Roberto, into the Cape Verde, and it's very interesting just to find out about how they actually make their football team. And Cape Verdeans abroad, who are more numerous than the population of the islands themselves, are a major source of players for the national team. So players coming from Asia and all across Europe as well. The nickname for the football team for the country, they have two nicknames, Pico, the Blue Sharks or the Corollas. And of course, the country spans the 10 volcanic islands in the Central Atlantic Ocean. So it's a very interesting way that they pick their football team, and you're going to go and play this week for a team called the Blue Sharks.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, it's a great nickname, to be fair. Yeah, obviously, look, my dad's from there. I've been down there twice, so I know all the islands, and especially the volcanic activity. I think one of them is just a volcano. Like, so, yeah, it's great. It's great to be a part of it, and it's great that my dad can say that he is some player for Cape Verde, like, so I'm delighted for him, and he's delighted as well. Like.
Yeah, your dad's called Carlos, and you know he's at all of your games nearly all the time, Roberto, when you were playing for Bohemians. He used to be there on a Thursday to cook the post-training meal for the team as well, so he's had a massive influence on your career. How's he feeling about it all, and will he actually make it over to watch the games?
Yeah, like he's buzzing, like the whole family's buzzing, my mum and my dad, and it's just great to see. You can see every time now that I come around, I'm giving him information about the up and coming games. There's just a grin on his face. He's just he can't control it. Like again, same with Ma. Yeah, they're going to try and make all of the games. I still have to get a few details just in regards to the stadiums that the games are being played in. But yeah, they're going to try and make it over for at least one. Anyway.
And as well, like I know when you spoke to us on the podcast last year, I was asking you about your nickname and where the name Pico came from, and you were talking about your dad when you were younger and you know the family giving you that name, and you always knew where your dad was from and that they had a football team. And we know that, I know Jack Byrne, your teammate's in the Ireland squad, but it's not overly common, you know, for people playing in the League of Ireland to play international football for Ireland. But we always kind of think in the back of your mind, you know, because of your dad links to there, that if your football was going well, that this might be an option?
Not really. Like, I think someone asked me about it before, obviously, because obviously you don't get many Roberto Lopez's in the league either.
So
people asked me, like, obviously, about me down, about me background, and obviously I think a lot of people knew that I was half Cape Verdean. But it's not really something that I was just like kind of chasing. I said, yeah, I'd look into it if there was a possibility. Like, but I haven't really like pursued it with any real intent. And I probably wouldn't have, to be honest with you, unless someone got in contact with me. So I was kind of blessed in a way, like, because I'm probably a bit lazy.
Yeah, and you mentioned as well that, you know, you've been over there a couple of times and about to volcanic islands and stuff. For people here in Ireland and from Dublin who've never been there and don't know much about the place, just talk to us about your experience of being there as a kid and you know, what the country and those islands are actually like.
Yeah, well, it was a bit of a nightmare trying to get down there. Like, I wasn't been down about, I'd say over 10 years. Like, but remember when we were trying to get down there, I didn't get to fly to Portugal, and then you had to fly into the main island, which is Sal. It was like the main airport. So we used to fly there and kind of stay overnight before you could get a local flight to Sandy Cloud, which was where my dad's from. And it's a beautiful beautiful set of islands now, I have to say, with Sal especially being very nice. I think that was the most modern at the time. Like, it was really done up. There was lovely hotels. And then where my dad's from, it's more of a kind of like farming. My granddad would have a big farm down there, which still be slightly undeveloped in some islands. But that's come a long way now in the last few years, because my dad was down there, I think, only last year. And he said it's been vast improvements. Like, but yeah, lovely set of islands, great weather. So that's the most important thing.
Yes, of course. And I'm sure when you went there as a kid and, you know, again, well, you were probably what? You're what, 25 now, 26?
I'm 27, I'm getting on, James.
My God, that makes me feel very old. Roberto Lopez is 27, so you would have been 17, 18 the last time you were there. So, you know, you were a teenager, you were old enough to go and kind of appreciate the place where your dad had come from and all the history behind that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, like, even when I went, I was probably a bit younger now than 17. And when I went, like, it was completely out of my comfort zone. I went down there, obviously, because probably the furthest I travelled at that age. And it's only now when I look back really and reflect, I was thinking, I'm so lucky to be able to experience that as a young child to travel that far across the world, like, and just take in my surroundings. Like, and again, it's only now when I look back, I think it was brilliant. Like, and I'm looking forward to going back again.
Yeah, great stuff. And firstly, looking forward to these friendly games for your new international country, the Cape Verde, against Togo and against Congo as well. Pico, thanks for your time. Have a safe flight and we'll see you soon. Cheers.
Thanks, Jamie. All the best.
Nathan, I'm definitely getting man flu. I can hear it when I'm listening to the headphones that I'm getting a bit of man flu. So sorry if I make you sick.
And what do you attribute your man flu to? When did you pick it up?
I could have picked it up on Friday night at the IMRO Radio Awards in the Lyrath Hotel in Kilkenny when 98 FM won 6 awards. Tell us more.
Yeah.
Wait. We have our very own round of applause, people, in studio on Sunday morning to applaud the station for winning Music Station of the Year again.
Yeah, and that was a seamless segue, by the way. But also, Dara Quilty picked up 2 awards for General Music Programme for the Big Ride Home and Music Entertainment Presenter. Dublin's Hawks won gold for the Current Affairs Programme. We picked up a silver award for imaging, a bronze for a certain, now that's what I call sport. And as you mentioned, to top it off, Music Station of the Year. It was an incredible night overall at the IMRO Radio Awards.
Yes, well done to everybody at 98FM. The best in the business in music. Great stuff. Well done, everybody, and congrats. And we're all very, very happy. You can see all the photos on at 98FM's Twitter page. Or there's a great story on 98fm.com as well with all of our videos and photos from the night as well. Now, tell me about Joe Ward last night, Nathan, and a very serious knee injury on his pro debut, unfortunately.
Yeah, his pro debut in MSG, it ended in disaster. He dislocated his left knee 55 seconds into the second round against Marco Delgado. It was a gruesome injury. He appeared to lose footing and fell awkwardly. Delgado was, of course, ordered the TKO victory. This isn't the first time that Ward suffered this injury. He suffered it in 2013 as an amateur at the European Championships, and we wish him a speedy recovery.
Yes, now Kieran McGeehan, personal best?
Yes, in the final of the 1500 metre at the World Athletic Championships in Doha, Kieran McGeehan posted a time of 4 minutes and 1/15th of a second. The gold medal went to Sifan Hassan from Netherlands, who lodged a championship record time of 3 minutes 51 seconds. Congratulations to Kira from all here at 98FM.
Now, Aaron Connolly, the 19-year-old scoring Premier League goals.
Yeah, the man on everyone's lips, some would say. The Irish youngster scored twice for Brighton in his Premier League debut as they demolished Tottenham 3-0 at the Amex. He became the first team to score a Premier League brace since a certain Robbie Keane many moons ago. This performance has Mick McCarthy knocking on his door, and he has been included in the Irish senior squad for the upcoming Euro 2020 qualifiers versus Georgia and Switzerland.
Yes, and after yesterday's brace for Brighton in that win over Spurs, Connolly spoke to Sky Sports.
Can't really put it into words at the minute. Obviously, like, it's a dream come true. I've watched it since I was 4 or 5, maybe, watching Premier League years all the time, and to be playing in it and obviously scoring in it now, it's indescribable. I'm just dream come true, yeah.
One special moment, and then the second one was probably even more special. Fantastic goal.
I didn't really know how to celebrate, to be honest. I just thought I'd run away, but I can't really put it into words. I'm kind of speechless at the minute.
Your Honour, that's what I call sport on 98FM. It's Jamie Moore here on Sunday. Can't wait for Tuesday night, Tallaght Stadium, 7:30. It's Ireland against Ukraine in their second Euro 2021 women's qualifier. Now, we want Tallaght Stadium to be packed to the rafters to watch Vera Powell, the new manager, take her first game in charge, and I'm here with her now. Vera, welcome back to the show again. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
So Vera, we spoke 3 weeks ago when you got the job. You gave us your first interview. How would you reflect on your first few weeks as the manager? You've just named your squad for the game to take place on Tuesday.
It's been very specific because I had to announce a squad of players that I've not worked with. So I needed a lot of help. Of course, the doctors helped me. Sue Ronan then we appointed Eileen Gleeson, which has been a fantastic appointment because the three of us together could get to a squad that is, I think, strong and solid. Some injured players are coming back, so you need to decide who to drop because those players are regulars in the national team. And what I said 3 weeks ago, my starting point is the Montenegro game, is the base that Colin Bell and Tom O'Connor have set. So it's been busy with lots of phone calls and Skype meetings and getting everybody involved. And then we got all the video footage from our video analysts. So we could see a lot. We could see games. We could see clips. And that was really, really helpful. And it's very special that tomorrow I have a meeting with Colin Bell. To discuss how he sees the team, how he worked, which steps he took, and then the dynamics of the team and his ideas of where we stand at the moment. I think everybody appreciates that I need all the help at this moment of everybody. It's a togetherness which is very unique. But we need to win this game, or at least get a draw out of this game. So it's very special that nobody finds him or herself bigger than the squad, and everybody opens themselves to each other to get a process going that was started by Colin, in a way that we are now on a team that has a chance to qualify. So egos are not involved. Everybody's open, and I'm so happy and proud of that.
And for those people listening, Ireland's opening game of this campaign was a 2-0 win over Montenegro at Tala, a game that Vera watched before she was confirmed as the manager the next day. Germany are top of the group. They've won a couple of games and by, you know, massive scorelines. And it seems as if Ireland and Ukraine could be the two teams who are trying to play out for second. The top three second-place teams qualify automatically and the other teams go into a playoff. So this is an important match.
It's crucial. It's the crucial match for us because what you say is absolutely right. It's between Ukraine and us normally. And Ukraine is ranked 12 places above us. So we really, really have to have the best out of us to be able to win. But out of the home and away game, we need to have a positive result, which means with not losing this game. So that will be the starting point. We cannot lose this game. And we sneaky try to win.
And you also want a massive support at Tala Stadium, and the crowds in recent years, we cover all of the games, have grown and grown and grown, and there was a very good crowd there for the matches that you watched. But there's been a big push to try and make it even bigger with the three stands in Tala Stadium as full as possible. What would that mean to yourself and the players to have another new attendance record for this game?
Well, that would be massive, and we need the people. We need you to be part of us, to be part of this journey, to be part of this process and project, because that makes the difference between qualifying and just not qualifying. If we have a difficult time in the game, the crowd can really help us. And I hope the crowd to come that will be loud, but I hope that everybody wants to come to the game. Every girl that plays football in Ireland needs to come with at least with parents, friends, brothers, sisters, and be as loud as you can for us.
How will you be feeling at 7:25 on Tuesday when the national anthem is on and you're about to manage your first international game for Ireland? You've managed a few other countries around the world, Netherlands, South Africa. I think you've worked in a couple of other places across the world, but to be the Ireland manager for the first time when the national anthem is on?
It will be very special. We'll be very proud. But key is at those moments that you're tuned in and that your emotions are not carried away with you. And that will be very difficult because, as you say, managing a country is very special. And I appreciate all the openness that Irish people have given me already. So at that moment, a foreigner taking charge of your team with your national anthem is something, if you open that and you're enthusiastic about that, that is so special. I will always cherish and appreciate that. So you will not see me singing the anthem because I've never done that. That is out of respect for the people. It's not because of not wanting to sing, but it's your anthem. It's not my anthem. And I, deep down inside, I feel it and I'm with you, but it's your anthem. So I will not sing your anthem like you probably won't sing our anthem.
And just lastly, we've spoken in again recent years and months about the, you know, how massive the growth has been in women's sport, not just football but in the country. And, you know, a couple of weekends ago the All-Ireland football finals were on for the ladies in Croke Park, and 56,000 people, another attendance record there. I think it's 5 years in a row that those attendances have grown. We've seen how fantastic the Women's World Cup was, and there is a real sense that women's sport, along with this 2020 campaign, is really starting to grow, and you being the manager of an international team in our country will hopefully be a massive thing for that. But I'm sure you can feel it the same, that things are really starting to grow, from everything from participation to TV coverage to everything, really.
Yeah, it's a great moment for women's sport in the whole world. I don't know where it's coming from, but there is this momentum that things are turning around, that female athletes are taking really seriously, are taking in a way that their development is crucial for the country. That you have the right to develop your talents, that the opportunities should be equal. And let's not confuse that with equal payment, because that is a completely different subject. What matters is that you get the same recognition and the same opportunities to develop your talent. You have the right as a woman to receive that, to receive the opportunities to develop your talent. So yeah, it's massive. And also here in Ireland, we will feel it, we will hear it. It's part of our own behavior also. It asks something else from us, and it can only grow from here.
Farrah Powell, thank you for your time. Good luck on your first game, and we'll speak to you again. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And everybody, come along.
We will. We need you. We'll be there. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
And next on 98FM, an exclusive sit-down chat with Ireland's number one, Darren Randolph.
98 FM. Now that's what I call sport.
Hey, it's Jamie Moore here with FAI HQ in Dublin with the Ireland goalkeeper, and he's here, of course, to tell us about these massive upcoming games in the Euro 2020 qualifiers. Two away games for Ireland, make or break, really. And also the Darren Randolph Goalkeeping Academy, which is main hub, is here in the National Sports Campus. If you haven't seen it, the indoor dome is absolutely out of this world, and lots of the young keepers in Dublin and across the country are training with Darren's academy. So Darren, thanks for having a chat. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
So firstly, talk to us about your academy, and I know you're in the UK, but you're over and back, and you have a couple of business partners here who are working on it with you, and you're trying to help the next generation of young Irish goalkeepers.
Yeah, I'm obviously playing in the UK, so I try and get back as often as I can. It's always been kind of at the back of my mind to do a bit of coaching, or like I said, actually now having the academy, and just, As you alluded to that in the question, you know, work with or try and develop, you know, keepers for the future. The game's obviously changing and developing all the time. So as you see now, we go through and name some of the young keepers coming through. It's becoming more and more probably how good people can be with their feet, maybe before they look at the goalkeeping. But if you can try and tie everything into one and get the fundamentals, you know, from an early age, you know, who knows, you know, what keepers we can produce in the future.
And there's been a massive change in how goalkeepers are coached. You mentioned it earlier on, apart from maybe being much more involved with the outfielders in certain parts of training, whether that be, you know, playing out from the back or whatever it might be too, but also the work you do individually with your goalkeeping coach, and I know you're trying to do that in the academy too, is give each goalkeeper specific, you know, help and training for exactly what they need, which I'm sure when you were a bit younger, it was just a goalkeeping coach or a parent whacking balls at a keeper. It's totally changed now.
Yeah, as you said, when I was younger, it was a parent or a you know, an assistant coach that would, you know, pull me to one side and do the normal volleys, half volleys, you know, I'll just take shots at you. And then, you know, there was no playing out from the back. Even when I was in, you know, at the in my academy days when I was younger, there wasn't even teams then that played out. Everybody kicked long, you know, the old, if I put the ball on the right side of the 6-yard box, I'm kicking on the right side. That's how it was. But it's moved on so much from when I was in the academy. It's more and more now about playing out from the back and using some teams using a goalkeeper as an extra kind of outfield player. So the game's definitely evolved and it will keep doing so. So I think now it is more and more important for goalkeepers to be comfortable with the ball at their feet. Some more so than others, but I guess the younger you get started, then the better it will be, you know, as you progress in your career.
Now, speaking of playing out from the back, I'm sure that night in the Aviva Stadium, the Germany game, your long ball to Shane Long, that goal, you were happy you didn't play out from the back that night and you'd come on for Shea Given. And we were just saying before we started the chat, I was actually presenting FAI Stadium TV that night for the first time, and I've never felt a stadium rock as much as it rocked then. And I actually got goosebumps that night, and it was just incredible. What was that night like for you? And how early after you kicked the ball did you think this has a chance for Shane to get on it? And then he went and obviously did the magic.
Look, like thinking back to it now, I remember getting a pass back from, I think it might have been David Myler, I think. And I remember just seeing a white jersey flows me down. So in my head, I was thinking, just get it onto your right foot and then just get it, like, get it clear on the right side, because I knew we had Shane and Jonathan Walters on our right side. So obviously managed to get the ball out of my feet. Had a quick look up. I was like, right, I roughly know where this is going to go. And then I just tried to kick, obviously, as hard as I could. And probably a split second later, I looked up and I was like, looking, I was thinking, all right, that's out of danger, that's good. And then, like I said, next minute, it's bouncing over everyone, and Longy's through. I'm thinking, go on, go on. Then it goes, obviously, he went on and he scored. And as you said, like the noise, the atmosphere that night was unbelievable. I haven't been involved in anything since at the Aviva, since that night. Obviously, going on to play in the Euros, you know, that's a whole different kind of atmosphere and different kind of highlight. But for to come on in that game against the world champions then, to kind of play a role in that goal is something very, very special.
Yeah, I had Shay Given with me in studio last year about his autobiography, and we were talking about, you know, the end of his years with Ireland and that night and his own memories of it, and given that he'd, you know, he was a senior goalkeeper and he got injured that night, and I suppose the luck, if that's the right word, of him getting injured, even though, you know, it's not a nice thing to say, for you to get in and you haven't looked back since, but to be able to have come in, done so well, kicked that ball to get that assist and have been in the team ever since is something, again, you're looking at going, well, if Shay hadn't got that little, what would have happened? Like,
exactly. It's something that's gone through my head, you know, quite a few times since then. You know, they always say you do need a bit of luck. Obviously, it was bad luck on Shay's part. You don't want to see anyone get injured, and I'm not the type of person to wish an injury on someone for me to get my chance. But at the same time, it's that probably bit of luck that I got to actually play that night and be a part, and you know, been lucky enough to have been playing ever since.
And ever since is right, and in the middle of a new campaign now to try and make it to Euro 2020. I was at a presentation earlier on in Abbottstown for the launch of the Colleges League, and they were asking again for volunteers to come and work with four games in Dublin, two of which would be Ireland games if we qualify. We've made a very good start to the campaign, three games left, two away games, Georgia and Switzerland to come, starting on Thursday. What's your thoughts on those? I'm sure you're all very excited to get going again, despite the reported defensive crisis.
Yeah, always. Not just me, but you'll go through all the lads. Like, we love coming away for international breaks and meeting up and getting together. You know, we have a laugh. Obviously, also helps when things are going well on the pitch. Currently in a great position, but we got, you know, three tough games, group defining games. Obviously, you know, injuries happen in football, and that's obviously why you pick the squads that you pick, or why you have the squads that you have. And as you spoke about, you know, me getting a bit of luck, could this be someone else's chance or the bit of luck they need to step in and take the chance?
And if, and we won't know until Mick McCarthy names the team on Thursday night, but if Shane Duffy doesn't make it, or Richie Keogh doesn't make it, or Seamus Coleman, or whoever it might be in that defensive area of the pitch, does that for you add any extra importance for your own role, given you are the number one senior goalkeeper, and maybe, you know, that back five that has been so consistent, or certainly, you know, those three have been so consistently in the team, that there might be a change in front of you that you might have to, you know, just lift your performance a little bit?
I think, like I said, being one of the more senior players in the squad, you get, haven't been used to this, probably settle back for. There will be some changes. So, yeah, I suppose I'll take it upon myself to try and be more of a leader, or take more on myself, even if it's just organised, trying to organise people. I think as a senior player, that's kind of something that's put on your shoulders anyway. It's expected, yeah, of you if you're an experienced player. That for you know, in tough times, you could kind of take more responsibility and try help out some of the younger boys.
This match against Georgia away, you know, fans and media to a certain extent will look at it and go, it's Ireland against Georgia, Ireland should win the match. How difficult are these type of away games? We saw the first game in Gibraltar with the wind and with the aeroplanes, and how difficult that became in the end. And for you guys playing in the matches themselves against these type of nations, how difficult are they, given everybody says, oh, sure, you have to go and win that?
Yeah, it's a a lose-lose situation, as I like to call it. Like you alluded to the Gibraltar game. On paper, everyone looking, oh yeah, we'll take six or seven.
Yeah.
But then we end up winning 1-0. We had obviously a few chances. It could end up being four or five, but it only ended up being one. And oh, the lads only scraped through. But even then, travelling away to a team like Georgia, very good technical side, capable of keeping the ball. You know, we saw that in Dublin. We faced them a few times over the last few years. Technically, very good team. Difficult to break down. Not an easy place to go, as you can see from probably it was Denmark that went there and drawn the game. Again, people before would have thought from the outside, oh yeah, Denmark go there, win easy. It's not always the case in international football, you know. They're a very good technical team. It's you know, historically a tough place to go. So we'll obviously need to be at it and on the ball.
And as well, the last game of the campaign is going to be at home to Denmark too. We've got the two away games first. Is there a real sense among the group, I'm sure there is, of just the importance but also the opportunity, given that there are going to be two Ireland games here if we make it, of how big these three games could be, given the hard work you've done in the first five to put yourselves in the position that you are in now, but knowing, I suppose, how difficult these three will be with the reward at the end if you do manage to get there?
It's hard to not think about the what ifs, and like I said, the rewards of actually having two games in Dublin to qualify for the lads that have been or that had that went to France and that were involved, you know, to be involved in something like that, and also having two games, you know, in Dublin would be something huge. And I only wish, you know, that everyone that's involved now actually got to experience the Euros, you know, because people that were there can speak about it, and we can talk a good game and say how good it was, but you don't probably fully understand until you're there, and we're in a great position. So I really hope, you know, we can do that, and then you're able to experience, you know, as you had two games in the Euros at home.
And just lastly on that, and what it feels like as a player to do it, I was lucky enough to work at Euro 2012 in Poland and 2016 in France and be at all of the games and been at every Ireland home game working for a number of years, and we mentioned that match against Germany. But for you guys as the players to be able to achieve those results and those moments and the qualification for tournaments, I know you haven't been involved in all of them, but that sense of what you're doing for your country and the connection you guys have with the fans. I remember I was just behind the families when Robbie Brady scored the header against Italy, and I'm coming over to his brother, and just being so close to see, my God, this means so much to those guys. And I'm sure for you as well, that, you know, the amount of thousands of football fans that want you guys to do it.
Yeah, and we got a certain, going back to France, you know, we got to see only clips from social media of, you know, what it meant to the fans and everything else. So you see a totally different side if you're a player to obviously to what the fans experience, but you know, we know, you know, how passionate the fans are and what it would mean, you know, if we were to get there, and then we also know how good the support would be if we were able to qualify and get two games at home in Dublin.
And that's the kind of the outside noise of the fans supporting, but there's also, you know, sometimes people are a little bit unhappy with the style of play or the Mick McCarthy, Stephen Kenny succession plan or what's going to happen. As a footballer, you know, and you're on social media and you're very active on it, do you listen or watch or care what anybody kind of thinks or says about that side of things? Because lots of players say, oh, well, I don't see it, but you guys now, you do see it because you're honest. You see, you might not want to read it, but sometimes you do see it and hear it. Like,
yeah, you see and hear everything nowadays on social media. Most players are on there. So, but again, it comes with the job. People have their opinions. You can't stop people from, you know, saying what they want to say. It's just up to you whether you listen to it or not. Me personally, not interested. It doesn't affect me going on the pitch and playing. People may moan about the, whatever you say about style of play or whatever the future plans are, whatever else. If we qualify, no one cares about style of play. We've qualified. Future plans, they're not here yet, so they don't, for me, they're irrelevant. You've got to focus on what you can control and what you can affect, which is the here and now. So for me personally, you just got to try and block it all out and just get on with your job.
And very lastly, has Robbie Keane scored any goals on you in training with Ireland or Middlesbrough in the last while? Because I do see him with the training bib on the odd time, and he's Ireland's top goal scorer, so I'm sure he can still whack the odd one in.
He joins in well, as often as he can. I think he's struggling with his ankle and hips now, but he joins in whenever he can. Still probably the best player in training. But I think so far I can honestly, hand on heart, I can't remember him scoring. Although I always try and pick to be on his team. So, but again, you can ask him if he remembers a goal he scored, then so be it, but I can't remember one so far.
Great stuff. Well, hopefully you can keep the record going for Ireland in these three games coming up. Darren, the best of luck. Thanks for your time and good luck with us out with the Darren Randolph Academy. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, full chats with Darren Randolph, Vera Pau, Roberto Lopez and Shane Byrne in the podcast section of 98FM.com just after 10. And have a great Sunday, folks. See you. Bye-bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, folks. Bye-bye.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.